This book is dedicated to everyone who tears up their front yard to plant big, chaotic wildflower gardens, to farmers who think hedgerows and wildflower field borders are just as important as crops, to urban planners and landscapers who turn gray and lifeless concrete landscapes into corridors of biodiversity, and to members of the Xerxes Society. Well, that's the opening page, believe it or not, to Feed the Bees 100 Plants to Provide a Healthy Habitat to Help Pollinators Thrive by the Xerxes Society. It's about bees, the birds and the bees, Winnie the Pooh and his honey pot. Unexpected bee stings is a part of the life and lore of our childhood, although I'm not so sure that that part is still true, because walking over here from the library, I noticed many, many patches of clover and absolutely no bees in the clover. Anyway, bees are a part of our lives, or they need to be part of our lives from birth on, and bees are a very important part of the lives of the fruits and the vegetables that we want to eat. Even more, there is growing concern that a dangerous decline in the population of wild bees, much less human-encouraged bees, mean we are in danger of leaving large swaths of our countryside without ready pollinators. Are you listening, Clover, outside Purdue? Stories on NPR, in magazines and newspapers abound, and, of course, today's book. But wait, bees? You say folks actually want to attract bees into their yards, into their farms, into their cities? Who are these people who dare to encourage those stinging, buzzing insects into their gardens and their lives? Well, it turns out that such folks are not so odd or antisocial as you may think. After all, there's a whole society called the Xerxes Society, which aims to make bees a much more a part of our lives. And indeed, if you read the first chapter of Feed the Bees, you'll discover that the idea of bringing bees into our lives and taking bees very seriously dates back almost 100 years, probably more, but 100 years as far as our preface tells us. So if you are one of those people who find bees fascinating, or just know that bees are essential to our larger ecology and want to help bring them the food they need to thrive, this book is for you. To Feed the Bees is a classic reference type of book, something that is kind of going away in the publishing world, but certainly is well expressed here. It's scant on any essay-like writing, but it's chock full of color photographs and tables of written information. Everything from recommended species and notable flower visitors, which I'm happy to say includes butterflies, as well as the many bee types that you can attract with these plants. Plant uses, where to plant the thing, whether the plant offers human edible, herbal, or medicinal opportunities. After all, if we're helping to attract bees and butterflies, we might as well see if we can help that sprained ankle or perhaps that additional sore throat that we happen to pick up. And those handy small maps of the American continent. If you're a bird watcher, if you're a wildflower enthusiast, you will know what I'm talking about. Those little continental maps that are colored to tell us where such and such a species happens to show up most often. Well, those are most certainly found with every page that we turn here, bringing that access to bees in your area of the United States. If you're a dyed-in-the-wool gardener, you'll feel quite comfortable with the chapter breakdowns we find here. Herbaceous plants, meaning annuals and perennials, shrubs, trees, vines. Or if that's gibberish to you, there's a handy front-of-the-book index that you can use to look up that favorite plant that your nursery or your neighbor suggested you plant to attract bees or maybe even butterflies to your yard. Or perhaps you've checked with Purdue's Extension Service and want to follow up a bit more on their recommendations. This book is for you. Note that all the plants recommended are considered by the authors to be native plants, and they have some good reasons why that is the case, as they tell us. Quote, native plants should always be prioritized in creating pollinator habitat, i.e. bees and butterflies. While non-native species can provide complementary benefits, such as cover crops, native plants typically offer the best adaptation to their environment, and they have co-evolved with the many bees, butterflies and other wildlife within their respective regions. Ideally, we encourage you to protect, collect, and sow seed from native plants that originate within or near your own community. They do go on to say, while native plants are ideal, introduced plants are often an irreversible presence in our humanized landscapes. Many of the species can offer copious floral rewards for pollinators. Select introduced plants with caution, however, and avoid invasive or noxious plants to protect native plant communities and the wildlife that depend upon them. This is a book focused on conservation as much as it is on bringing bees and butterflies into your garden. That said, you'll find quite a few plants listed here that have more garden-ready cultivars that we ought to check out as well. Plants like salvias, coneflowers, black-eyed Susans, to name just a few. I noted earlier that the maps that are featured with each plant profile show where the native species is to be found in the wild. And it's amazing how many of these are actually found throughout most of the contiguous United States. There are several in here that show the entire continent, whether it be the United States or Canada, as a natural home habitat. But bees being the adaptable creatures we're told that they are, a plant that is native to the West Coast may be as readily visited by bees in the Midwest or even the East as a plant native to our area. So let the plants be a fun visual guide rather than a must-follow dictate. And heck, go out and look in your yard, in your garden, in your way spot, wherever it may be, and see if indeed the bees are following you when you plant something. There are many fine books and not a few websites to help us build gardens and yards that attract bees and their more colorful and often welcome insect relatives, the butterflies. Now we have a book that gives bees their due, too. And for those of us who are reference book geeks, it gives us one more great guidebook to add to our collections. Lots of reasons to pick this one up and look through it. Finally, a note about the authors. The Xerces Society, and that's spelled X-E-R-C-E-S, publicizes itself as a group of common-minded people who are protecting the life that sustains us. Since 1971, they tell us they've worked to protect invertebrates and their habitats. Why? Because invertebrates are an essential part of all ecosystems, contributing to the survival of wildlife, the pollination of crops, and the health of our environment. That's from the Xerces website. Particular emphasis is given to bees and butterflies. They have actually produced several different books. This is their first one on bees. They've done a great job of pushing their bee agenda with this title. I'm glad to recommend it, and I'm glad to finish up our review by reading in their words. The spiritual tradition of this particular book descends from John Muir, Otto Leopold, Rachel Carson, and many others. These are the writers who inspired us here in Xerces in our youth and early in our careers, and who ultimately helped bring us all together as a big extended family that we are today. Our goal, like that of the conservation writers who preceded us, is not just to preach the gospel, but to invite you into the tribe. We hope you'll join us. The initiation is simple. Just plant flowers. 100 Plants to Feed the Bees provide a healthy habitat to help pollinators thrive. If you're interested in bees and if you're interested in butterflies, this book will give you a lot of good hints as well. Published by the Xerces Society, available at every fine public library that cares about bees and butterflies, including the West Lafayette Public Library.